Hi, my name is Joe Jackson. Sometimes fate throws us opportunities which later we almost wish we had missed. So I said in the obituary I wrote for Frank Zappa in the Irish Times in 1993, what did I mean by that? Well, earlier in the article I'd said that I always wanted to interview Frank Zappa, if only to talk about his definition of rock journalism. He said it was people who can't write doing interviews with people who can't think in order to prepare articles for people who can't read. I loved that quote, not just because it's funny, but also because it's accurate, though in what ways I'll leave for you to decide. More seriously, maybe, the opportunity in question was that when I got to meet Frank Zappa, we didn't do the kind of interview I would have preferred. It was more of a fleeting chat that took place in Zappa's home in the Hollywood Hills, to which I'd been invited as, quote, an Irish writer, covering the Chieftains' visit to L.A., to attend the Grammy Awards. Their album, Another Country, had been nominated, and the night before my meeting with Zappa took place, the Chieftains had won that Grammy. Now they were in Zappa's home studio, recording for their follow-up album, the song Tennessee Waltz with Tom Jones. Yep, you heard that right. And it did seem slightly surreal to me, at least in a superficial sense, to be sitting there with Zappa, Tom Jones, and the Chieftains. Either way, the reason Paddy Maloney of the Chieftains didn't introduce me at first to Zappa in terms of my being not just an Irish writer, but someone covering this event, was because, as he explained to me, as you can see, Frank is very ill. It might freak him to know there is a journalist in the house. And Zappa, who had prostate cancer, did look sallow and pale, a fact that was highlighted in more ways than one. During a lunch break, as he sat in a wicker chair beside a brightly lit window nibbling on a sandwich, and lost to Lord knows what kind of private reverie. At one point his son Amit walked by, smiled a little sadly, and squeezed his father's shoulder. This unspoken bond between Zappa's family also struck me from the way Gail, his wife, kept glancing across the room at Frank as if to say, "Are you okay?" If she'd been in his recording studio a half hour later, Gail would have learned how he was. After helping Paddy Maloney to untangle a particularly problematic chord sequence on the piano, Zappa said he had to go back to his room to get a blood transfusion. However, when someone casually mentioned that U2 were more highly rated in Ireland than the Chieftains, he said, "There's no comparison." Maloney certainly seized that opportunity. He then told Zappa who I was and asked if he would elaborate for my article. Zappa smiled and said, "Sure, I'd love to." And we then went to a darkened corner in an adjacent room. While we were talking, a nurse at the end of that room prepared to do the blood transfusion. By the way, the subsequent article you can read on my website, joejacksoninterviewer.com.
Even though it appears that U2 is the most popular and successful export, musical export from Ireland today, there's no comparison in the musical quality of what they do and what the Chieftains do. I mean, the Chieftains are musical. And I think what they do is beautiful. And what more do you want?
Okay, when did you first hear them? Like, would you have heard them like 20 years ago, the early albums? When?
No, I think it's probably been about 5 or 6 years since heard any of the recordings. And, you know, we play them here all the time. Gail always has them.
Right. Well, you know the way you two are now making claims for being a postmodernist rock band? And they're now claiming that's what they're doing. Yeah, I don't think they do either.
And, you know, it just, it's just...
They're trying to recreate, they say, the images of Picasso in music. Now, you know where that all comes from. So they are really seem to be more innovative, and people miss that the Chieftains were probably doing stuff like that coming from all different areas for 20 years.
Well, what would you rather have? Mediocre innovation or a direct linear descent from Celtic culture? And if you don't appreciate your own culture, then even if you come into contact with an excellent innovation, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
You know, who are you, and how are you going to appreciate it?
You feel that lineage in their work, which goes right back to the roots of Celtic history in that?
Yeah.
You hear and feel that?
Yeah.
And can you connect with it musically?
I love it. I love the way it sounds. I like the melodies. I like the chord changes. But especially, I like the way it's performed.
Right.
I think that each member of the group is expert on their instrument, not just in terms of their technique, but in terms of the concept that they have of what the final ensemble product is supposed to sound like.
Right.
Which is something you're only going to get with a group that's been together 30 years.
Right, right. You have the image of being the avant-garde composer of rock inverted commas music.
What?
The avant-garde, the cutting edge of the avant-garde of rock. I mean, a lot of the younger bands cite you as an influence in that area to try dissonance, to try kind of atonal music, to try stretch things symphonically.
I've done all that stuff, but I also happen to like, you know, normal melodies and
right.
modal tunes and chord changes.
Which is where they work.
Yeah.
And, right.
Rhythms and groups of three, which is
right.
where a lot of the music is.
Right. Okay, Frank, I can leave, but I don't want to push you any further. I thank you very much for talking to me.
I'm surprised that they're not...
They're really not by young people. But then you've got the divide of radio. Radio won't play them. Radio won't play our own music. We've recently appointed a minister for culture who's the first in our country, who said he's going to take action to make sure that the national radio station plays stuff like this instead of Billy Ray Cyrus and.
Oh Jesus!
You
can turn on a radio station in Ireland.
Yeah.
Billy Ray yeah. Cyrus and Naga the Chieftains.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
Well.
That's pretty tragic, right?
That's tragic, but then on the other hand, you can come to the United States and turn on a radio station and you won't hear what I do either, so...
That's true.
I know what they're up against.
Right, right. What are you currently doing? I mean, what...
Well, the album Yellow Shark, which is the recording from the German concert from last September,
right.
is about to come out. And I'm working on an opera, which... if all goes well, we'll be premiered in Vienna in 94. We're still negotiating that.
An opera with your own text or set to somebody else's text, or what is it?
It's all my...
Yeah?
The whole thing.
Yeah? Any particular style, I mean, of opera? Traditional?
No, it's very non-traditional.
There's yeah?
Very little, if any, singing. Opera. There's human voice.
Okay, okay.
But most of the material is spoken, and they all the musical accompaniment, or so let's say 90% of it, is done with a computer.
Spoken in a linear way, or is it like breaking up language into fragments?
It's all comprehensible language.
Is it?
You can understand the words, right. you can understand the sentences.
Right.
But when you hear the sentences and the paragraphs, you can still scratch your head over what the people are saying. Because it was created out of found objects, pieces of conversation
right.
that were edited together to make the plot.
Right. And what is it called? Is there a title yet?
Civilization, Phase 3.
Well, aspiring as ever.
Yeah, it's pretty inspiring, all right.
And aspiring.
Well. You know, all the music is done. The only thing
right.
that remains to be seen is whether or not it's going to go on to the stage. And the director of the Vienna Opera, the Vienna Festival, was here a month ago and listened to the whole thing. He loved it. And the problem is the show requires a lot of machinery on
right.
the stage. And so he's presently going around trying to syndicate the... performance to five or six other
all
opera
right,
houses
right,
so
to fund
the cost
it.
Of it.
Right.
And I haven't heard from him since he was here. But I had a meeting last week with Peter Sellers. You know,
all right.
He's another opera producer. And he heard it and he loved it and he said it shouldn't go on stage. They should make a film out of it
all
instead.
Right.
So something will happen with it.
The sound quality on film isn't always great, I mean, unless they do.
Well, they have a new technique
yeah, so
that
heard.
Lets you... put digital audio onto film.
Onto a film.
Yeah.
But not for home use.
Oh, for home use.
For domestic
sure.
use, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, all right. That makes
because
sense.
Because once the digital audio is on the film, when they transfer the film to video, they can do a direct...
all right.
You know, well, you're not going to wind up with digital audio on a VHS cassette.
That's right, yeah,
but
yeah.
You're still
yeah.
going to have something
Good.
A lot better than if you had done it all with 35mm mag stripe.
Sure, yeah. Do you think, you know the way, just the last thing, do you think anybody, do you ever hear of a composer, singer, songwriter called Scott Walker?
No.
Do you remember him? He did modern-day Schoenberg cycles around 1985, and he was heavily influenced by you in the 60s. I don't know. He's very Europeanized, totally Europeanized, and he moved totally against the grain. Like, he did Schoenberg songs on an album called Boy Child, Scott Four. He's become a big cult hero, and he's trying to make a comeback. But he did a 30-minute kind of Schoenberg thing for called Climate of Hunter, and he just referred it all to you, to the stuff he was listening to. Now, he sold 1,000 copies. I mean, but he has a magnificent voice, and it's stunning. But it is broken language. The syntax of the music is broken. The words are hard to follow. He takes you into a transfigured night in a rock context.
Well, I'd love
it. But he praises you. He praises you heavily for the influence you gave him.
I didn't even know that he existed, but I'd love
to. I'd love to send you a tape of his work. I adore the guy, and I hope he makes a comeback, you know. I want to talk to him for ages. Do you think anybody, I mean, within, you know the way you said that kind of, do you feel that anybody really pushed rock, explored it in the same extent that we'd say classical music has been restructured throughout the century? I mean, have we come that far from what we said, like Sun and that we're doing in the 50s?
Well, it depends on which angle you'll look at. Yes, dear?
Yvonne is here.
Well, I guess you can tell her to set up in the bedroom.
Okay.
You know, some people think that if you add one extra chord to a blues, you've expanded the horizon.
Right.
You know. And then if you dare to add that extra chord, you've spoiled the blues. So.
All right, yeah.
It depends on what kind of a purist you want to be in using the term rock and whether or not the horizons of rock have expanded. If they've expanded at all in the general sense of the word, they've expanded in the direction of corporate merchandising.
Right.
And most of the creativity that is that you see in the world of rock today is marketing creativity.
Right.
Very creative marketing, very banal material.
Right. Does that distress you? That it has all. I mean, there was a time when you and other people in the late 60s, 70s, whatever, and of late yourself are pushing things. But your solo voices.
You can only push so far because if you can't reach an audience, and if you can't afford the tour unless you're financed by a soft drink company or a beer company or a shoe company or something like that. You are driven out of the marketplace. And when the audience for music no longer knows how to listen to it, all they can do is watch it because they've been bred to that by MTV. There's a whole generation of people that would be set adrift if they were put in a room with nothing but the audio
and
nothing to look at. You know, they would lose interest in about 15 seconds and they'd be out of there.
Any hope then for music? I mean, in that context, corporate management or corporate processing is going to kind of kill it eventually, totally.
I think so. I think that, you know, what I say is get it while it's hot. And that's another good thing about the Chieftains. They play it live.
There it is.
It sounds good. And it's real. And it's musicians doing something. It's not just bullshit. Most of the rest of what you see and hear, especially what you see.
Right.
It's tragic.
Do you feel that you've gotten across your work to all the people you would have wanted then now?
Well, I think that the people who are destined to enjoy it, the bulk of them have come into some contact with it.
Have sought it out. Yeah.
And they've heard it and they've liked it and they've written me and said they liked it. And, you know, I think that there's a certain portion of the global population that's had a whiff of it and had a positive response, but most of the people, especially in the United States, haven't the faintest idea of what I do or what it sounds like. And
what's still hooking you into a kind of 60s progressive rock, that era? Still hook you into what like rock histories present you as rather than later work?
Well, if they present anything at all on US radio, it's some, they'll play one or two of the songs that were, quote, hit records from before, like Don't Eat the Yellow Snow, or in England, they'll only play Peaches and Regalia, or something like that, but none of the things that I would say are my best work.
Which are?
Oh, I like things like the Jazz Discharge Party Hats, or Dangerous Kitchen. Things like that. I would say there's nothing else in rock and roll or any other medium that resembles those two songs.
Right.
And talk about something that comes closer to a Schoenberg tradition. Here you have, it's not exactly rock, but maybe a jazz accompaniment to a Sprechstunde text presentation. In the case of Jazz Discharge Party Hats, the melody and the words were improvised.
Right.
And then the arrangement built around that in the studio.
All right. So it's really closer to jazz. I mean, that is...
That particular one.
Yeah.
And Dangerous Kitchen, the lyrics were written, but the recitation, or the pitched recitation, was something that was done freeform on stage. With the band following.
Right.
And I'm not recommending that as a musical direction for any young performers. You know, they'll sell fewer records than Mr. Walker if they do.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. Can I ask you how your health is?
Not that good.
No? What does that mean? See, we haven't, every, more people here seem to be very aware of how you are because it has been covered by.
Well,
but in Ireland,
you know,
I
have prostate cancer. It's spread to my bones, and I don't feel well.
Is it terminal?
Well, everything's terminal.
In the short term?
I don't think so.
Right,
I hope not. But it's not a terrific sensation. Now, I've got to go in and have a blood transfusion.
All right. Okay, then I won't keep you any longer. Thank you very much.
Hi, Joe Jackson here again. I thank you for listening to this edition of the Joe Jackson Interviews podcast. More can be heard on my website, joejacksoninterviewer.com.